Hey everyone, this is Trey Atkins alongside Campbell Garbert, Jack Vesey, and Graham Copeland. Welcome to the Barners Before Bed show, Wednesdays at 10 p.m. on Weagle 91.1 FM. Your home for late night Auburn athletic coverage from a fan's perspective each hump day. War Eagle!
And with that, we bring you episode 41 of Barners Before Bed. I'm Trey Atkins here, joined alongside a special guest tonight, Wilson Hampton, a good buddy of mine from Lexington, Kentucky, here to break down the chaos that has been the past couple days in college basketball, and to be more specific regarding Kentucky and the SEC in total with John Calipari moving on to Arkansas. Wilson, thank you for joining us tonight.
What's up, man? Thanks for having me on.
Of course, and we're here on a Monday, National Championship Monday night, with about 20 minutes to go till tip, as UConn and Purdue will face. I believe I'm not alone here in thinking they're the best two teams all season, which is rare to see in college basketball, so we have a treat tonight following the show.
Yeah, before we roll, give me your prediction.
You know, I think UConn's just a wagon, and it's going to be tough for Purdue to keep up with them. As we've seen, they can get hot in a hurry. They could toy around with you for a half, and then they bring out a killer instinct, as a lot of their players alluded to, and we saw in that 30-0 run against Illinois. And I just believe Edie's going to find his match here with Kling Kong, as some call him. It's finally the time he's found his match, and we'll see for all these NBA guys out there if he'll be able to handle his own against a fellow NBA center. So yeah. A lot to see, both for the future and a lot on the line for some college basketball legacies, as UConn. Some people say they're on the brink of a blue blood. I think they're already there, but I think a sixth ring, their sixth in 25 years nonetheless, would definitely cement that.
No, dude, I totally agree. And, I mean, not to dive too deep into it, but, I mean, in that Bama game you saw, Bama almost played a completely perfect offensively, performance first half. And then, dude, it was just a matter of time. Once they get it rolling, once they get clinging going, and, I mean, they're just a force to be reckoned with. And Hurley, man, he can get those guys to absolutely play. I know we're going to talk a little bit more about him and UConn. And so I don't know, though. I think that, like you said, that matchup with Edie down there, and then with I think those – Those Purdue guards are really underrated, with Lawyer and 55, what's his name, Lance Jones, and Braden Smith.
About to talk about him. He struggled a little bit against NC State, but it didn't really affect anything. But he's been one of my favorite guards all year.
He reminds me of you.
A little bit. No, I mean, I was a little bit more like an Aaron Kraft. You're going to compare me to a Big Ten guard. Wasn't afraid to let my body fly around the court. But, there's a lot of guys in this game that I've been paying attention to all year. Cam Spencer, I think he's your token
dog.
I wish he would have played at, like, a Duke or Wisconsin
so we could have hated him?
Yeah, exactly. Be a little bit more hateable. But we were talking about Dan Hurley, and, boy, is Dan Hurley going to have a decision to make. Back to our starting point here. And funny enough, maybe more of a talking point, actually, for a lot of the media outlets throughout the country, it is the main media talking point. John Calipari going to Arkansas. What's next for Kentucky? What's next for the SEC and college basketball landscape? Because this domino effect of a big name and big job switching up is going to have a major ripple effect.
Yeah, I mean, if I told you that the biggest story in sports on the same day that the two best teams in college basketball are playing is going to be a coaching change. And it's not only a coaching change, dude. It's a seismic, whatever you want to call it, rift in college basketball. And down here at Auburn, I mean, are you nervous? Like, I mean, I feel like that's the first thing we should kind of touch on. Like, I mean, are you nervous that Pearl gets a call and it'll be, you know, too difficult to decline?
Yeah, so I think both schools in the state of Alabama should be, any school, honestly. I mean, crazy enough, Kentucky is, if you compare it to a football job, right? When you think of one of the best jobs in the country, for me, a lot of it comes down to the fans, which Kentucky has, the money, which Kentucky now has,
right,
back with Calipari departing, I guess, with some of the booster
stuff. Yeah, and you mentioned, like, in terms of these big jobs, think about it. The two arguably biggest jobs in college sports are open in the same year: Alabama football and then Kentucky basketball. How crazy is that?
Yeah, if I would have told you a year ago, we'd be sitting here in April with Cal and Saban both not still in their office coaching their two schools. Like, that is a crazy change what we were expecting. Yeah, go ahead.
We say Pearl, we say Oates. Obviously, tremendous success they've had at their respective schools, and you have turned, you know, programs who really weren't basketball oriented at all to be, you know, they've bought in, especially at Auburn. They have one of the best fan bases in the SEC now. But if you're Mitch Barnhart, who are your first four calls?
Well, actually, I want to hear your opinion first as a Kentucky guy. First heard the news,
right?
I think a lot of people in Kentucky, including myself down here, one, didn't think it was real. For the people listening here, there was a sit-down meeting with Mitch and Cal where they basically said, went over some things and said, let's run this back one more time. The buyout was a little much. Go a couple weeks later, and there's still not a clear-cut reasoning of why this all happened. What was the reason? Because there's still stuff coming out about Cal in February being interested in the Ohio State job. So he was obviously uncomfortable where he was in Lexington. Maybe he was looking for a way out, and I think the Big Blue Nation also was excited for the, I guess, divorce, if you call it, what some people in Kentucky call it. But what was your first reaction, and then what would you say the main population of Kentucky was thinking as well, before we get into our coaching replacements?
Okay, so you want to hear my opinion? Sometimes you have to move back to move forward. Ricky P., Up in New York, I know he's got his. That's such a Rick Pitino job up there, but let's bring him. If they brought him back, I mean, I'm not. That's not serious. That would be awesome for just college basketball in general. But I mean, how crazy was that? I mean, I've just seen on Twitter and, you know, like we were mentioning before the show. Pardon my take. Them just doing the whole. Or around bringing Pitino back to Kentucky, but I mean, like he would probably like listen to that, but that's not who would be the top four or five in any means for me. But to get into that, I would probably say, you know, we talked before the show, you have to make guys say no, especially those A-listers, if you will, for college basketball. With those including, you know, you got to offer Danny Hurley an absurd amount and make UConn match whatever that is. I know a lot of people have been talking about Danny Hurley's agent is just dancing right now because, I mean, he's going to, either way it goes, he's going to get a pay raise. And then I think in that category of making them say no, Jay Wright for me. And then Brad Stevens, which would just be a long shot, but I think you still got to give him a call. And then Billy Donovan. I mean, third time could be the charm, bro. I mean, I know up in Lexington they've wanted him twice, and rightfully so. I mean, he's a legend in college basketball. I think he would fit in perfectly in Lexington and with that job. I mean, what does he do? Like, are the Bulls, they're in the play-in maybe? I mean, like, he hasn't had a great success in the pros with the Thunder, and then obviously the Bulls now. Like, do you think he would want to come back to college? That's kind of who I'm circling, if you're asking me. I know people are on the Oates, which him and Scott Drew, I would want to get the calls after those ones I just mentioned. But do you think he could come back to college? Like, what's your opinion there?
With Billy, I think maybe his course is running to an end in the NBA, but the tricky thing with him is a lot of the guys from his era in both sports with the new NIL are departing, whether it be Harbaugh going to the NFL or Saban retiring, guys becoming analysts. This new wave of NIL stuff is a turnoff for these old school coaches who run their ship, and I sort of think in a way that's why Calipari's having to readjust. He's going to Arkansas. And now, well, he's going to have some NIL money there at his disposal. To put it bluntly, these old school guys loved, I still think they cheated, but they liked to do it when it was illegal. It's like for people out there that like kids drinking, like they like to do it with a fake ID rather than their real one. It's more fun with your fake ID.
You don't get the adrenaline from it.
For sure. But on the topic of Pitino, right? Kentucky's in a great position where there's other old school guys you can bring back too, like the likes of a Billy Gillespie. Like, look at Tarleton this year.
Not to go too far from talking about replacements and everything, but like I was talking about this with a buddy after class today. Like, how cool. I mean, I think it was the right decision for both parties in terms of Cal and Kentucky breaking up with the fan base. I'm sure you've covered that before, but I mean, think about him returning to Rupp next year in that game, and like it just it seems like it's just, like with Nate Oates, with Cal, with, you know, Musselman. Now he's at Arkansas. There's just going to be so much like around the SEC, especially look at the personalities. Just think from what it was 10 years ago, the SEC. I mean, dude. Like, and it's not just like, I know 2 weeks ago everyone was having the conversation, is Cal going to be fired? Is he going to, are they going to get rid of him? You know, what's going to happen? Like, now not only is he gone, but he's at a school down the road that you're going to play twice every year.
For sure, but it was the right time. Yes, it was weird for a lot of Kentucky fans to see him, even in those graphics of him in the Arkansas red. I can't believe
it's crazy, dude. How weird is that to look at that?
I think for him, yes, Arkansas is probably, would you say, a top 20 job in the country?
Yeah.
Oh, especially
yeah.
With now
maybe 15?
Yeah, maybe even 15. They have the fan
dude,
base.
The support is crazy, and you saw the NIL like details there. I mean, he's gonna have everything. Dude, they're going to be good. You know they are.
Yeah, it was also kind of weird to see how Musselman didn't have the resources that Cal is about to have. And in reverse, this next guy at Kentucky is probably going to have some resources that Cal didn't have. And that's why this departure with Cal
good
was
split.
It was the right time. The media, for those of you listening in the Auburn, Alabama area that probably hate Cal. Everyone hates Cal unless you get him on your sideline. Look at the old school Arkansas
fans.
And
that's why I think whoever is the next Kentucky coach, I think would be great, you know, especially for people around here who already hate Nate Oates. I think he would fit that mold very well in terms of a hateable, just unlikable winner, just doesn't care what you think. We're going to shoot 50 threes and just get up and down and win. I mean, as long as Nate Oates and Bruce Pearl, we were talking about this today too, as long as they're here, they're going to be good. You know what I mean? So, like, I think if Kentucky, I don't know, you know, there's a lot of talk about that Drew would kind of fit Kentucky more in terms of like who Mitch Barnhart would hire. If Nate Oates doesn't get a job like this, Bama's not stopping. You know what I mean? Neither is Pearl. But you know, Nate's got a little more time. So like, if I'm an Auburn fan, I want Nate Oates to get going
for sure. And that would reclaim Auburn being the premier school in the state. I guess 5 years ago when Bama fired Avery Johnson, it was Bruce's world down here when it came to basketball.
Yeah.
Auburn had the Atlanta pipeline. Now, Oates comes in and I think this is another reason why he'd do good at Kentucky. He's a great recruiter. At the end of the day, you still have to recruit. I know it's the transfer portal era, but when it comes down to it, if you can still sneak in a couple guys, even if they're there for four, like you'd like them to be there for four, but if you can get the generational like one and done's, the tricky thing now about why one and done is dying is the guys who aren't generational, like your 15 to 20 guys in the they go after 1 year at some schools.
In college basketball, dude, I mean, with the COVID stuff and the transfer portal, bro, like these players are 24 there's 24 to 26 year olds, which is crazy. And then I mean, like, we get into the domino effect, if you will, for the coaching, like we just talked about how it all started with Andy Enfield at USC leaving, and then he's like, oh, I'm going to SMU, they're in the ACC. Muss is like, I'm a West Coast guy, maybe these Arkansas fans are a little too much for me, maybe it's not for me, I'm going to go back out West Coast. And then it's like, well, you missed on, if you're Arkansas, you miss on Jerome Tang and Chris Beard, and then next thing you know, you've got a Hall of Fame coach from Kentucky's coach. Like, how crazy is that? And now the Kentucky job is open. But if we're talking, you know, hypotheticals of Oates getting that Kentucky job potentially, then maybe what if down the road, Bucky Ball?
Honestly, if Oates, I don't think Oates will go anymore after seeing some of
Bucky Ball
the
Sanford
stuff.
Coach for those.
Yeah, for sure. I think Bama would hire Bucky, and from some Mountain Brook sources, Bucky yeah. is a Bama fan. So that
I great feel like that system. Was, I love the way they play.
What about Bucky 10 years down the road being Kentucky's coach?
I like it, Bucky to Kentucky. Yeah, you like that one?
It has a nice little ring to it. But back to Kentucky now. Let's go ahead and send out realistic and dream. I know you gave your dream, but realistically, we said Oates. Even though there's some stuff coming out that he's happy in Tuscaloosa, his daughter goes to Bama, I believe is a freshman or sophomore.
There's a meme that his kids had just enrolled at Lexington Catholic,
yeah,
and he just bought a horse farm in Versailles, but keep going, sorry.
And Patino's also living at the castle yeah. on Versailles. With the Kentucky job, there takes a certain guy. That's why I don't believe Drew, as great of a X's O's, like he turned Baylor from absolutely nothing to winning the national championship. Going from Waco to Kentucky is just completely night and day.
Right.
And Hurley, I think, is a guy like when Cal was at Memphis. And if you've watched the Cal 30 for 30, you know how Cal craved, absolutely craved to be one of the guys at the table, right? Be up there with Calhoun, be up there with Kay, Roy. I think Hurley, even though he's won these titles, the fact that UConn and the Big East, it's just, like, look at the numbers. The SEC from the media rights with ESPN gets $70 million, where the Big East, no football money, yeah. so they're stuck with the Fox thing, and no one wants to watch. I guess Gus Johnson, I'll turn on
yeah,
those
I mean,
games to watch Gus Johnson, not the
UConn's,
game itself.
UConn's number one undisputed overall, and they're the best team in the country, and it was hard to find them on TV, you know?
Yeah, it was very hard. I had no idea when they were playing. I feel like they would play on random nights.
Right. And it's just not the same, which is... Back to the aura around the Kentucky job. If it's not the best, it's top three, top two job. Who would you put other than Kentucky?
You got to put Kansas. Carolina, but Carolina stays within house. That's yeah. why they hired.
I even saw Carolina people saying that Kentucky's the best job. You know, so yeah, I think it would definitely be a switch up. From Calipari to Drew, I think he, instead of, you know, just this personality that recruits and just has that swagginess to him, I think he's just a great basketball coach. I mean, he had the greatest, he had arguably the greatest rebuild in college sports history. I mean, dude, to win a title. But on the other hand, you know, outside of that national title year, it was COVID year too. I don't want to, you know, downplay that at all. But it hasn't been necessarily like the highest elitist level. I mean, they've been great. And with him coming to Kentucky, I think he would kill it with that job. But it's not the sexy name, you know, you would think when you're Kentucky, which I think Oates has a little more of that. But I, you know, if I'm a Kentucky fan, I would not be upset at that hire at all. I think he would win, and I think they would see a change in terms of just on court X's and O's and play style that is just more consistent and just overall better, I guess, for lack of a better word, than what Cal had. So it'd definitely be different. To kind of shorten this up, I wouldn't be upset if I was a Kentucky fan, which I mean I am. I root for Kentucky. If Drew was the higher, but I think they could do a little bit better.
Yeah, and then some other guys, we talked about the aura and stuff. Oates, when Cal came, he was the guy who manifested the one and done. Oates is sort of manifesting the analytical aspect of basketball. Hurley's manifesting
exactly.
the transfer portal roster. They're both Calipari-esque to me.
Yeah.
And the prime coach for Kentucky was John Calipari in his early years.
Mm-hmm.
What, 2010 to 2017, 18, 19, really anywhere before COVID.
Yeah, bro, have you seen Bama's like shot charts?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Like I think it was the Elite Eight game they played. They shot, I don't know how many threes it was, but there was one shot not behind the three-point arc or in the paint. Like, it's layups and threes, and that's modern college basketball. He's adapted. The biggest thing right now is adapting with the game, and Notes has been the best at it. I heard something to where, you know, at halftime he got like a, I think it was a third-party analytics something that came in at halftime, and you know, said, they told him, hey, this this is how many shots you've taken, and this is how many good shots you've taken, and you should be up 11. I think who did they play in the Elite Eight?
They played Clemson, but on that note, we're going to have to take a short break.
Yeah,
when we come back, we'll continue to talk the coaching carousel in college basketball, maybe talk a little other aspects of the college sports world, like the spring games.
A little Auburn baseball?
Yeah, a little Auburn baseball. Willie was actually at the game.
And then there.
Yeah, the national championship's about to tip off, too. So stick around. This is Barnes Before Bed. And welcome back. Barners Before Bed, episode 41. Sitting here now around 8:20, around tip-off time here for the national championship. For those of you just tuning in, we broke down a little bit of the John Calipari.
Calipari tournament,
what potato,
is it?
Tomato.
What is it actually, though?
I mean, I guess it just really depends on where you're from. Have you ever said the word tournament before in your life?
Tournament? Ricky P?
Ricky P. Dare I say, for a big name program, though, you kind of need a coach that uses the word tournament, like a.
Yeah, I know. Get you the Big East, the old Big East, the Northern guys. Those guys, they just breathe basketball, man, and that's why the old Big East tournament and just those dudes from up there. That's the best, in my opinion, the best type of college basketball and coaches, but. We've got an anonymous question here.
Yeah, I saw from the text chain. I believe it's our fan John from Cynthiana. What do you have to say?
Shoot, let me find it real quick. The question is, how would you avoid a coaching hire like we had with like an Eddie Sutton or a Billy Gillespie? Like, how would you avoid? And you've seen them all around the. College sports industry. So how do you avoid that? I mean, it's Kentucky. It seems like it'd be easy to.
Yeah, so I was obviously Sutton was before my time. And it's kind of funny now with Cal going to Arkansas. It's like the reverse trade from back then. But Sutton, I believe, was successful. And then it was something with actually Avery Johnson, the old Raptors and Pistons coach, that led to that. But with Billy Clyde, to put it in a football perspective, right, Kentucky – at the time, had a coach who was averaging 20 wins. It's a very, very parallel scenario to what Auburn football went through when firing Gus Malzahn. Extreme early success in his first year, sustained success the first 4 years after that, and then complete mediocrity. And it led to the fans wanting them to move on in both parties in this comparison. And Kentucky landed on their version of Brian Harsin, who had a little bit of an off-the-court issue when it came to, beverage consumption, but we won't get too much into that. But I guess nowadays it's just really analyze the coach more and see it. It also, what we were talking about earlier, with the aura of the Kentucky job, it takes the right guy.
Right.
Kentucky's one of those jobs, like an Alabama football, like a... even the Cowboys, where it sort of has to go in tenures, like they do in politics, where it doesn't run dry in the end. Any coach, like Saban, Popovich, they're such an anomaly. And even the guys like Popovich and Belichick towards the end, their times wore off. I don't think we'll ever see something in college sports like a Saban again. So if you pick your guy, like Patino, if there's any baggage, right, a guy like Patino, probably don't go to him. A guy... I think Bruce has overcame his previous baggage. Like when Auburn was looking for a coach at the time, that's like a Vanderbilt football hiring Bobby Petrino.
Right.
But with Kentucky, if you're on that level, and Auburn football is also like maybe a little bit below that level, but still the point where you have the crazy fans, you have the resources, you can't have a guy that's going to come in and not appreciate that, where Harsin and Billy G did not appreciate their respective
right
resources.
It's much more like at a place like Auburn football or even basketball now in Kentucky. It's more than just coaching, you know, at the respective school. It's much more than that. It's being a part of the community, and I think that's what Bruce Pearl does so well, dude. I mean, he gets everyone loving it and bought in, like taking his shirt off at the football games. And if Kentucky were to go that route, and that, you know, potentially that hypothetical, you know, happened, Kentucky fans would love him. I mean, he would come in and unite the fan base and do kind of what they wanted Cal to do, I guess, for these past few years, is just connect with them. So,
and that's a testament to Bruce. I don't think there's a fan base and coach in the SEC that are probably more connected than that relationship of Bruce Pearl and the Auburn fan base. I think he's the most involved, and that's also Auburn is a lot smaller than Lexington, a lot smaller than some other college towns in the area too, but he's really, and also he was at a position where when he first came to Auburn, they were struggling, right? It was the post-Barbie era, and for Calipari in Kentucky, he came in right away and hit on the jackpot with that John Wall club. So I guess like an arrogance that was earned, where Bruce continued to earn his stripes. And
right. No, I completely agree. And if it's, we were just talking about, it's so tough, especially Auburn fans experienced it this March with those first round exits. You know, we talk about, it's just the worst. You know, the tournament's going on for three more weeks after, and all you can really have to do is watch tournament games, which sucks when your team loses, and especially the first round to a 13 and 14 seed. And then all you can do is just speculate on who's coming back, who's going to the draft. But with that being said, I will say it is spring, though. Spring is in the air. Do you have any A-Day thoughts? Not only spring football. Auburn baseball, Auburn golf is rolling. J.M. Butler, I know Kentucky has a great squad with Alex Goff and Andrew Clark and Jackson Lalonde really coming on for heading into Sea Island. But what about your A-Day thoughts?
So I just watched highlights. Cam Coleman looks ridiculous. Have you seen him? Auburn's,
bro. That was just gonna be my literally probably only takeaway. I mean, I have other takeaways, but I mean, Cam Coleman, dog. Yeah. Just straight dog.
I know you didn't really, you obviously watched a ton of football, but didn't really know the ins and outs of Auburn. That was one of the biggest complaints throughout Gus.
Right.
They had some playmaking receivers, but never really like that ace NFL type, if it's third and long, we still feel comfortable type of guy where they can go out there and make a play. But yes, he is now one of those dudes. But
QB,
yeah.
QB, like, is it just, you think it, we're just rolling with Peyton?
I guess you got to, right?
Hank Brown looked all right. Had some dots.
Yeah.
I'm still, I think it's Peyton. You ride with him, but definitely a better quarterback room, you'd say?
More experience. A year under Hughes' playbook.
Yeah.
They know.
Favorable schedule, that's all I'm going to say.
For sure.
Yeah.
And Auburn and Kentucky play each other in October, too.
Yeah, back-to-back years, which is sick for us.
Which is, I can't believe that was after we were done with school. That would have been, our one Kentucky time was.
Literally, we got that, and then not great four-year stretch for Auburn football in our college career.
Safe to say.
So
we were talking about.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get off track there.
Oh no, all good. This leads into what I wanted to ask you next, because this is the worst feeling as a fan and college sports fans. As we watched on the way home from Mississippi State, Brandon Walker talk about why it's so much more painful, because in a blink of an eye, it's gone. Like, if you're a pro sports fan, right? Let's say you live in Philadelphia. Your team loses in the NBA playoffs. You have 100 more baseball games left to go. And then
you're a big baseball guy, right?
Well, I'm trying to pick up new hobbies now that both Auburn and Kentucky lost in the first round. I tried the Reds, man. I just can't do it. I mean,
I am with soccer, so.
Just, like, understand the Olympics at this point.
You can get into it. Auburn, even though Auburn hasn't had a great start, I mean, the games are electric. I mean, it's crazy how they'll pack out that stadium. Every game, even, like, not great weather, and the record's not great right now, but obviously a lot of time to turn it around. But yeah, you're completely right about the pro aspect. 162 baseball games. That's so true, dude. I mean, in NBA too. I mean, that, how many months is that out of the year?
Yeah, and playoffs also coming up with the NBA too. And I'm sure you can agree with this. Let's say your team is down 3-2 in the series. You can go ahead and mentally prepare for the fact that the season's about to end, or you're down 3-1, 3-0.
Right.
You can't mentally prepare for Jack Golke or Yale to come out of nowhere and just end your season.
I'm tired of hearing that name, bro. Jack Golke.
Or in college football, let's say,
look at dude. Have you seen all of his NIL stuff that he's just gotten?
So annoying.
Too? So annoying.
Well, I mean, make the
did
most
Reeves,
of it. I guess.
Did,
props
did
to him.
He win? Who won the 3-point contest? Did you
the
see that
Nebraska guy?
Nebraska. That he's cool.
Yeah, he's cool.
I wanted did Golkey make it far?
No, he was actually the worst one.
Good.
Well, I don't know if you've listened to his that drive home from Lexington to Auburn on Easter will have you looking up some weird things, but I listened to Jack Golkey. Wait, go ahead.
I know we mentioned pro sports a little bit. I got another anonymous question.
All right.
Your thoughts on the new NFL kickoff rules and the drop tackle rules? Have you seen all that? Have you seen the new, rules
no,
and everything?
What was it? Fill me
so
in.
So, like, if I'm not mistaken, and listeners text in and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that they're lining up, have you seen that? They're lining up, at the opposite 20, and so, or wherever. They're on the opposite half of the field, and then the returner will catch it, and then, they're it's almost like we'll have to come back to it. I need to.
I sort of know what you're talking about. I believe they did that in one of the spring leagues, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know.
And I don't know the technical details of the drop tackle. I thought you would know them a little better, which is why I brought it up. But I don't really know to the details of it to get a take on, but I know it was very unpopular.
I'll give you this take, and for the normal listeners of the show, Campbell and Graham have given me a lot of crap, as you can imagine, for being a kicker, being a former kicker. And
dude, you had a boot.
It's, I don't know, kickoffs. This is all. I guess this is sort of like a football guy.
How
thing
many?
To me.
How many total career tackles did you have in middle school, high school?
I had a push out of bounds. Does that? I would purposely not kick it in the back of the end zone so they could return it and I could make a play. Like, there's a scrum. I'm the last guy on top just to make my impact felt. Maybe get a little grass
and then
on the white jersey.
Getting chest bumps on the way back to the sideline.
Yeah. what back to what we were talking about earlier in this scenario. Which one would you rather have? Your team losing in the first round, or let's say you go into a football season with high expectations and you have two losses by October. Which one's worse?
Oh, dude, that is a great question. It's a stinky question because those are probably
the worst.
So you said first round to a high seed or two losses going into October.
Here, let me paint you even more of a picture. You're a 2 seed that loses to a 15. Or you're the preseason number 6 college football team that has 2 losses, but those losses are rough.
Yeah. Okay. So they're not like at LSU and Bama.
No, they're
top 10 teams.
They're rough to the point where Mizzou hits a 51 yarder to beat you.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna go 15 seed. I don't. That's just because the NCAA tournament is my favorite event to ever exist, and it's the most fun thing ever, especially when your team's in it and winning. And when you're a 2 seed, that means you had a great year. You might have won your conference tournament. You had such high expectations. Just give me the second round. I'll lose to 7 Wichita State and, whatever, and complain and whatever. Even just the second weekend, but that is brutal, man. And because not only that, dude, you miss out on all the fun, in my opinion, with the second weekend, and it's just not nearly what it would be winning that first game and getting that off your back to start the tournament. But then I will say, dude, you're right. That's probably my second least favorite thing ever is to lose 2 games and going into October. That's why I tend to like Kentucky scheduling a little bit more than Auburn's, because Auburn usually has a tough one there to start and higher probability of losing. But no, dude, there's nothing worse. I mean, you have high expectations, and then like you said, you go to Mizzou or a Mississippi State or and you just a last second field goal and you didn't play very well, and then your playoff hopes are gone. Isn't very fun. But now, I mean, I would definitely say the tournament hypothetical because, you know, you could lose two games early and still go on a run and make the playoff now. I mean, with the new, the new format.
That's a very good point. Also, the difference is, and you said this, when your team loses in the NCAA tournament, you can't watch for maybe the next day. Probably if you give it to the second weekend, you'll definitely tune in, but it's just, it hurts. Yeah. Within college football, you're still going to go tailgate if you're in October.
100%.
I guess like the second weekend for a competing college football team is get me to late October. I want to watch the first college football playoff rankings and see Herbie and them.
Plus, like, you lose that game, then the first round of the NCAA tournament, it's over. Like, you know how I am. Like, whoever, Auburn, Kentucky, loses two games in the first, I'm like, oh, dude, we're gonna by that next Saturday, bro, I'm right back on the horse being like, okay, we're fine. We can do, you know, so-and-so to win the SEC, and then we're going to the playoff, and we're rolling. So I would definitely say there's nothing worse than losing in the first round of the NCAA tournament, in my opinion. I would say you would agree.
100%. And the worst, even worse part is when – other teams you dislike. This year for Auburn and Kentucky fans, let's just cut all the beef and just join together in mourning about how bad this March was for both of us. With Bama in the Final Four, Tennessee and Duke both in the Elite Eight, just sweating that out and having to watch that. And Carolina too. I mean, it was just all around. But
yeah, I know. It's like that kind of brought me back to life a little bit in terms of watching the tournament. I was like, okay, now all I need is these teams to lose, and then I'm good.
Yeah, once those teams lose,
you know, in the national championship just started, and that shows you how much, you know, we care to not talk about that as much. You know, when your teams lose, it's to give a quick update to people, watching, and our true listeners who would rather tune into Barners. Trey's a little. It's 18-16.
18-16. Right, well, we're gonna go ahead and take a quick media timeout. I believe they're about to hit the under 12 as well.
Yep.
We'll come back and wrap things up here on Barners Before Bed, episode 41. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll be back shortly. And welcome back, Barners Before Bed, episode 41.
41. Who's the first person that comes to your mind when you think 41 in sports? I got mine easy.
Really? Was Rob Chubb? Do you remember Auburn basketball? Rob
Chubb.
I don't think he was 41. I know he was.
Oh,
he a 40?
Oh my gosh!
No.
Had a lock.
The running back.
I feel like this would have probably been obvious.
Yeah, far away. I'm blanking.
Dirk.
Oh yeah. We've had some. We always like to title a number with an episode, and we've had some random ones. Sal Canella.
Wow, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I feel like you get it's that'd be tough through like the 36 to 40 type stuff or like the late 20s. But
yeah, I'm actually curious to hear what you have to say about this. So another topic we do on the show is guys talking ball, which is really just us naming random old college players. What's the first like random Auburn or the most random Auburn football player or basketball player that you can come up with? For an outside,
you would know it. It's from the 2010 national title team, who was, he played like a H back kind of like a tight end, number 27,
Mario Fannin.
Yes,
So that's also a polarizing topic on this show because I grew up with a Mario Fannin jersey. Also, me and you going to Auburn dates very far back. We were at the infamous Gene Chizik ice cold random early October game against Kentucky when we were, what, 8, 9 years old?
Yeah, dude, the reason I remember is, like, you kind of got me. My mom went to Alabama, for people that don't know, and she tried to get me to cheer for Alabama, but I, you know, never really truly did. And Trey, that team was so sick with Cam and everybody. And I, for some reason, dude, you asked me that question, and that's always who's come to my mind, just that random part. Mario Fannin, dude, he's a beast. And then you had, like, Lutzenkirchen and everything. Let me ask you something.
Fire away.
So UConn's up 3 with 10 minutes to go. Edie's got 11, only one rebound, though. Only one free throw, which is surprising. So, but I'm saying if UConn hypothetically pulls this game out, I think they're already a blue blood and they've solidified that already.
For sure.
But Where does that put them in your mind, in your eyes, among, you know, the college basketball's greatest programs?
I know there's a lot of people out there, especially, it's kind of funny in basketball because I don't think it happens in football, where the blue bloods sort of dislike each other. Like, I don't think Alabama and Notre Dame dislike each other. Or I don't think Oklahoma and Michigan.
You don't think so?
Do you think Oklahoma and Michigan, probably two football?
Okay, yeah, Oklahoma and Michigan, that's better, a better one.
Yeah.
Maybe,
I don't think any of them are really, there's more one-on-one.
No, I know what you're saying. You're 100% right, though. Because, yeah. I mean, how many blue bloods would you say there are in football?
I think there's an argument for so many.
I don't know if you can, like, it depends on your definition of blue blood. I don't know if you can say, like, there's 12 blue bloods really in anything. But, no, you're so right. Like Bama, like, just because, like, they don't play each other in non-conference as much, and it doesn't mean, at the end of the season, it's just tournament format's different. But you're 100% right, because, I mean, I feel like, you know, Kansas, Kentucky, North Carolina, Duke,
yeah, they all, Indiana, like, sort of cheer against each other. But back to my point, I think it's
other, exactly.
Because of that, I think the schools like Duke and others, a lot of Kentucky fans too, maybe because they want Hurley to have more reasoning to maybe accept a Kentucky
job. Do you remember a similar situation, 2014, when night before the title game?
Yeah, Rex Chapman tweeted out.
Cal 2 Lakers.
Yeah, it's kind of.
Got the Big Blue Nation a little, got their feathers a little ruffled there.
I tweeted that. Also, that happens so many. In an Auburn example that comes to mind, I believe before an Iron Bowl, like, Gus got a Augusta, Arkansas rumor. But I think it'd be so funny for UConn to have more titles than Duke and Indiana, and just as many as Carolina.
Yeah, it would be funny.
But in the same,
and their clip is ridiculous. And I mean, what, this is how many? If this is their what, eighth Final Four, seventh?
And they've won every title game.
Like, six out of eight, which is crazy.
2009 was the only time they didn't.
They were in
Carolina and Hansborough.
Were they in the Final Four that year?
I think so. But
sounds right.
Back to the point, UConn's such an anomaly. It's a hard thing to grasp because we weren't really alive before this run. It's the only thing that comes to mind is sort of like the Patriots, but the difference between them and the Patriots, because they won those six in that same little time span, is UConn went 8 years without a tournament win.
So,
like, who could you compare UConn to
so
anyone?
It's so weird, you know? It's not, like, the consistent history, but, like if you're going back to, you know, in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, when Kentucky, UCLA, North Carolina were all still good, it's not like that in Kansas, obviously. It's like new blood, but I mean, if they have six and they already have five, they're a blue blood, you know?
Yeah. What do you classify as new blood, though? I think Auburn, Alabama, Gonzaga, schools like Baylor are the new bloods. And those are the schools that have been good, relevant of recent years.
Like,
I know Gonzaga's
for me, it was like Villanova when they won in 2016 and then 2018. That to me was more of a new blood because they're on almost that second tier, but not quite a blue blood. But like,
yeah.
But, like, not like Auburn.
They're, like, light blue blood.
Not like Auburn and Alabama, no disrespect at all. Like,
they're the up-and-coming third
tiers, no question. But, like, new blood, I feel like, is little more success, which I would say, like, Gonzaga and Villanova and I used to consider UConn, but I don't think there's any getting around that they're blue blood.
I think,
where would you – what's Villanova for you?
They are, I just, off the top of my head, light blue blood. And that would be the...
So, yeah, that's what I...
You can factor in history with the light blue bloods, as in, like, Louisville, Indiana.
Yeah.
Those type of schools.
Yeah.
I would consider that in football, like, LSU.
Light blue blood. I guess there's a little in-between between blue blood and new blood.
For sure. And then you
there's
have...
There's a light blue blood.
Yeah, and then you have... Let's say
if you really want to get...
The random, like,
analytical
runs, right? When Florida won those two titles, there's like random runs, but UConn, like, if they didn't have that 8 year gap without I didn't even think of UConn for 8 years.
When you
thought of UConn, you thought of Geno and them, like the women's team.
You still thought Calhoun. He was pretty prominent and is. But like it when they came on the scene, like. Really, when I remember, I guess when we really started getting into, you know, college sports, it was like with Kimba and them in like 2009, and then obviously that great run in 2011, and then with Kevin Ollie, and, you know, they've kind of always been there. And like early on in that run, like I mentioned with Kimba, like still with Calhoun, I still thought of UConn as like, okay, basketball, you know, still a top program.
Yeah, for sure. But Calhoun retired in 2012. Okay, this is where I'm like so confused about UConn is who was the coach in between Kevin Ollie and Hurley? Do you know who it was?
Was there one?
I think so. Like, that's the thing about UConn. It's like they went
I can
just
tell you, but yeah, I didn't even realize there was one.
Because I think Ollie was actually pretty bad, other than that Shabazz Napier run. That's the other thing that's annoying about you. They defy everything. They defy KenPom. They defy any analytics when picking your bracket. Their couple of their titles, like the Kemba run. It's really an unbelievable thing that this program has been through in the past 25 years, and there's nothing you can compare it to. Because you could compare Villanova to, like, oh, like the Kansas City Chiefs a little bit, or like Clemson. I've like that little. I think it was the same time span too when they were winning titles both together, Clemson and Nova. But Bama's and other rich blue bloods, like deep blood blue bloods, have generations of success. Where UConn's has just been the biggest drop tower roller coaster of one century slash like 20-year period.
Right. There wasn't.
There wasn't. Mm-mm. When did
it kind of felt like it? It was 2018. I guess because Kevin Ollie, there was obviously this. He got a little bit of trouble, but I remember Dan Hurley came into from Rhode Island. It doesn't feel like he's been there that long since 2018. It feels like kind of 2020. But I mean, I always see that clip of him like being like, "You better get us now," and he's right. He's about to get back to back. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I think everyone's picking UConn by double digits or slightly, you know, more. But I think Purdue, it's 23-23 right now. I think they're at the under 8, but gosh.
Yeah, I saw some people talking about today how if Purdue doesn't win it now, they probably won't ever. I mean, this is probably their best season.
Yeah, dude, when are you
going to
be? Yeah, I think it was Rothstein. You might have sounded John Rothstein. He said, if Purdue doesn't get one tonight, I don't see them getting one, like, or having another chance as good as this. Let's just say that. Yeah. Which, like, I mean, do you?
Back to close things off, I still love making the comparisons. Edie has done something, right, that not, I think the last person that did it, was it like Kareem when he was Lou Alcindor's? It was something crazy, winning two Naismiths. Who would be like the college football comparison of a guy that you know is sort of going to suck in the NBA, but was so dominant in college? Like, I feel like he's like Tebow without an aura a little bit.
Yeah, no, 100%. I feel like that. I think that is a great comparison. Honestly, not quite to the extent that Tebow was, just with how the titles and how truly dominant he was. Not that Edie isn't dominant. I mean, he is a beast, man. He is awesome. I think he gets too much hate. You know, I mean, you can't guard him. Like, people get angry about how many free throws he shoots, but like, I mean, they foul him. I mean, he's just unguardable. It's just it's something like that, but. I think you're totally right in terms of, like, he's not going to be a good pro, at least in my eyes. He's not going to be a good pro. He's just an awesome college basketball player, came back for his senior year, and, like, I think he was, like, kind of, you know, unheard of or swept under the rug a little bit. He didn't make anything in NIL. Do you know that?
Yeah, because he's Canadian. And he had the visa.
I recently found
same
that
with Oscar.
Yeah, I recently found that out, and that's ridiculous. I mean, how much money would he have made, and he's just, you know... That's why I kind of was rooting for him a little bit, but...
You think it's like an under... Oh, yeah, are you buying his underdog story? He was a 7'3" kid at IMG. Like,
I'm not on that, but, like, I still think he's, like, gets too much hate. But you're completely right about, you know, I don't think he translates to the NBA in terms of his game at all. And, like, Tebow, like, it's like with that just wanky throwing motion. Yeah. Like,
actually,
it just...
I may have lied. I think it kind of does have an aura, just Purdue being Purdue.
Yeah.
Like, West Lafayette, Indiana, and Zach Edey's play style, I felt, are, like...
Hey, man. The year after losing to a 16 seed as a 1 seed, they've never lost a single tournament game.
Yeah, I remember the amount of times with, like, St. Peter's, we were talking about how, like, it'll be so worth it on this revenge tour.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
But who are some other, like, you not even, I guess, it's two different sports, but, like, what are some other, like, auras that match? Like, who's, like, the Johnny Manziel of college? Is it actually
a
campy one?
It's hard to say that, but back to the Edie thing, like, I think it was part of my take, guys, who said this, but I totally agree with. It's, like, there's so many haters out there that are, like, haters around Zach Edey. They're, at first, they're like, oh, they lost to Fairleigh Dickinson, which rightfully so. That's a, you know, valid criticism and everything and how they weren't good. But he comes back, has a dominant year, and then, you know, people are still trying to hate on him, being like, now that he's in the national championship, they're going, oh, well, he'll be a terrible pro. Who cares? He's a beast. And, yeah. Like, you know, it's kind of like that. So, just in college basketball, I mean, I feel like we have one in terms of not aura like Johnny Manziel, but I feel like we have a villain coming.
Who, McCain and Caleb Williams?
No, just guess. Next class.
Cooper Flagg.
Yeah, of a hateable program.
Yeah, Cooper Flagg, right?
I mean, he's going to be the worst.
Oh, yeah, and especially if Flip comes back.
Oh, my gosh.
People are talking about it's great for these players to come back. I feel
Which
like
is
though,
good for college basketball.
But it's been the wrong players. I feel like Baycott and the Edies of the world aren't going to make people like change. Like all the Rosillos and those who hate college basketball, it's not going to change their mind. Edie and Baycott. That actually hurts it more because they're like anti-NBA players.
Right. To finish up here, you brought up like Rosillo and those guys that don't like the college game, and I saw Alex Caruso say like he can't even watch college because it's just like just the game, the way the game is played is just, you know, not as hot, just a lesser level than, you know, the elite level obviously that the NBA is played at. I mean, dude, they don't miss, and the game and the flow is a lot better. For me, it's the kind of the opposite, and I think it probably is for you too. If I know you like I do, that I'm kind of like, I just have loved college for so longer. I think it's just more meticulous and kind of more of a cat and mouse chess match, if you will. Obviously, it's the skill and the level, you know, that's played is not nearly the NBA. But I think for me, it's harder for me to watch the NBA when they're just making a 35-footer every possession and it being 139-130.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's also, there's just more parity in college sports. Like, you know, the Warriors and Cavs played each other in the finals for four straight years. You just never know what you're going to expect. And I guess that'd be a good one to close because we got a championship game to go watch.
Yeah. All right, let's see. Wait, right before we get off, hold on. It's 30-25 now, UConn. Can Purdue come back? I guess we haven't watched a single play, but without knowing anything, do you think that stays true and UConn gets six?
UConn's going to get six. I think if Purdue was up 10 at halftime, I still think UConn would come back.
You're probably right. I was trying to argue Purdue all day today, but let's not get it twisted. It's going to be Hurley, and, you know, he might take a different job, though, tomorrow.
Yeah, and I'll let you close off here. Any closing thoughts, statements, hot takes?
Hot takes. I mean, you're king hot take, so I don't have nearly as much right off the dome as you do. I will shout out our listeners. Shout out Hamp Fam. I don't know, dude. This is kind of going into a dead period of sports. I love the NBA playoffs, but it's not, you know, college sports wise.
Yeah,
it's starting to get to the countdown to August football. Yeah.
Do you think? Ooh, yes. Let's close on an Auburn note. And then this will be the last one. Does Auburn make the 12-team playoff before Bruce Pearl makes it back to the Final Four?
Yes.
All right.
Hugh Freeze. I think he does that. I think that's – obviously the SEC is a little harder, but, I mean, that's way easier than getting to the Final Four, right? And it's Auburn. Hugh Freeze, the recruiting's better. Yes, for sure. Although, it's just so hard to get to the Final Four, dude. Yeah. I think Auburn will have better teams. Like, if you compare them, it's hard to compare basketball and football teams, but just, like, generally – like regular season teams, I think Auburn basketball will probably have more of them better than Auburn before that time they get to the 12-man playoff. But I do think 12-man playoff next year.
And I'm curious, too. One word answer: who wins the Masters?
Tony Finau.
Word. That'll be it.
You give me yours, golf guy.
Dude, I don't know. Who's like the villain? DeChambeau.
Yeah, that's not a bad pick.
I'll take
maybe a live guy. Kepka or Finau.
Yeah,
I'll leave it at that.
Well, on that note, we're going to go ahead and close here. Episode 41. Wilson, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me on. This was an absolute blast.
Heck yeah. Well, next time I'll see you guys, I will probably find out who the next Kentucky coach is. If it's Rick Pitino, boy, that will be a fun show. But nonetheless, we'll have a lot to talk about. We'll have a national champion at that point. and much more, a Masters champion as well, a Green Jacket, Nets cut down, and another Kentucky coach, and some more Auburn spring football news, and hopefully some turnaround baseball success. But from Trey Atkins and Wilson Hampton inside here at the Weagle Studio, thank you guys for listening, and as always, War Eagle.
War Eagle.
Thank you all for listening from us here at Barners Before Bed. We hope you join us next Wednesday at 10 p.m. right here on Weagle 91.1 FM. Sleep tight, Tiger fans, and as always, War Eagle.